Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Morning and welcome in. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. January is 13 days old. Much appreciate you starting your Monday with us, as always. What a weekend it was. How are you, Danny?
I'm good, man. Boy, did I not get it right when it came to what was going to happen in the postseason. That's what's so fun about this thing, right? Is you think you got a feel for some of these teams. You got months going from training camps to preseason. You got a vibe on the Titans, a 5-5 team, I think, that that may have beaten Kansas City in Week 10, just kind of going back to it. Yeah, but they're not the same teams now. And you look at Tennessee. Are they a juggernaut? This sixth seed in the AFC, are they the most unstoppable team in the sport? Maybe non-Kansas City Chiefs division? Incredible. Just some of the things that happened this weekend. Totally unexpected, but that's what makes it cool.
Was at a wedding this weekend, had a lot of fun, so that was a good time. I like weddings and delicious food and alcohol at parties where everyone's happy. Is that weird?
Nope, it's a good summary.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
That's a fun time for me. I did get to watch the football. Here's what happened. So we had the wedding in Richmond at this massive home, like a Airbnb style. We had a big reception that we did there. I had a guy with me, a cousin of the bride, who was super efficient and successful when it came to technology and somehow finding a way to get us to watch this game in a house that we weren't familiar with that didn't have everything we needed.
You need that guy. I know exactly the guy you're talking about.
So I just told him very early on Saturday. I said, look, I got a couple things I'm working on here to get ready for this wedding. Your job, you.
Right there.
You don't get to eat. You don't get to drink. You don't get to be merry. I'm not even letting you go to the ceremony until I see NBC and CBS on that TV this afternoon.
You see that one right there? That TV.
Make it work. And he did. So we watched all the football. Didn't miss a play. It was a lot of fun while enjoying ourselves in Richmond. It was a blast of a weekend. But what a great weekend of playoff games it was. We could start here with the Sunday games and work our way back to Saturday, but just kind of painting with a broad brush before we dig a little deeper. Packers-Seahawks was supposed to have been the best game of the slate, and it lived up to it. Green Bay jumped out to a huge lead. Seattle playing score-yard ball in the second half. Russell Wilson running all over the place. That's him at his best. That's where he's an MVP candidate.
Well, that's where they're so much better. I mean, God bless, you know, Brian Schottenheimer wanting to establish, you know, Marshawn Lynch early and often, I suppose, but they're at their best when you let the maestro work. When Russell Wilson is doing things where you just put your hand on your head and go, oh, my God, how do you do that? That's when that team was at their best right now. Yeah, you wish you had Chris Carson and, you know, you were healthier, but you ain't. This is where you are, and where they are right now is the Russell Wilson and the Marionettes.
I got Marshawn Lynch after being signed at 30 carries for 64 yards, which does not at all surprise me. But I also don't understand why they re-signed him. This is a old guy who's out of shape, who hadn't played any football. I can't imagine he was grinding his way through the last couple of months preparing for that call from the Seahawks. There are dozens of more qualified running backs, but in a who knows who and how many times have I worked with you in the past world, he gets the call, and then Seattle tried to make him happen. It's not just like giving him short yardage carries and carries on the goal line. He got a dozen carries a couple times here for them, which was stunning, but they were a lot better in the second half, obviously, than the first. The amazing comeback of the Chiefs down 24-0 over the Texans.
Unbelievable.
One of the more incredible playoff games that has been played in recent memory in the NFL. The Titans stunned the Ravens. Tennessee is the truth. They play defense. I don't know how anyone will stop Derrick Henry. They shove the ball down your throat. They time perfectly some shot plays. They had a big first down, touchdown on a 40-plus yard completion.
After that fourth down that Baltimore didn't get, boom, 14-0.
How about they stopped the Ravens on 2 fourth and a foot?
Uh-huh.
They stopped short of a yard needed twice on fourth down. The Ravens were 8 for 8 this year, and it was all Lamar Jackson on kind of read option keepers, and they stuffed him two times.
That was the game to me.
This is what I've said all year long, by the way. I love Lamar Jackson's game. I think it's good for football. I love that offense. but you better play from in front.
Yeah.
You better not need him to stand in the pocket and make throws. They did this weekend, and you see the result. A lot of by the way, could he throw more ducks? I don't think he can grip the football. That guy throws end-over-end passes when he goes outside the numbers.
Yeah, the outside the numbers, for whatever reason, it was like, I don't know if it was there was a certain wind or if there was somebody
that was hitting
pellets. But like he doesn't do that all the time. Outside the number routes. I was like, who is this? What's wrong with that?
Whenever he's got to throw the ball, I mean, that's the hardest throw to make. And he talked last year about not being used to the football and having a hard time gripping it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's part of it, but it doesn't come out. The scouting term is spin it. He doesn't spin it all that well.
No, those didn't look good, but when he drills a seam route, I mean, he could step in there and put some velo on it, but those sideline routes looked ugly.
But now people want to re-legislate his season and have this be a referendum on him like it wasn't amazing. People are just too much.
Yeah, this to me was we need to put Mike Vrabel to graduate into the excellent coach category,
yeah.
And Tennessee needs their props. That's what that game
also,
was to me.
Also, Derrick Henry looks unstoppable
to me. Yeah, he
does. Like, I'll pick the Chiefs this weekend, but how are they going to stop that guy?
I don't think they are.
If the Titans... I'll say what I just said about Baltimore. If they can either be within a possession or in front or even in this game, Kansas City's not stopping Derrick Henry. Who is? But here's the difference. Game script. You'll hear me say that phrase a few times this week. If they're behind 14-3 because Pat Mahomes and Tyreek Hill hooked up or Travis Kelce's eating them for lunch, now all of a sudden you're putting something on Ryan Tannehill's plate.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's changed about Ryan Tannehill other than who he plays for. Now, I give him a lot of credit. Ryan Tannehill makes a few throws here and there. He's athletic. He extends the play. He can get outside the pocket. But if you need Ryan Tannehill to win you the AFC Championship game, better luck next year. This is Derrick Henry in that defense or bust. And it's just a matter of being able to actually stick to that script like Baltimore wasn't able to.
Well, the way Tennessee's running the football, yeah, obviously Derrick Henry's been incredible, you know, breaking tackles and shedding people and stiff-arming dudes to the ground. But it's basically, if you don't touch him, before he gets to line of scrimmage at 6. Mm-hmm. And the way that line is creating holes, their run blocking right now is unbelievable. They're finding something that you don't have, and they're exploiting it. I don't know if it's a system of checks. I don't know if it's Ryan Tannehill spotting the spot and audibling. I don't know if it's just brilliant play call after brilliant play call. But if you don't slow Henry down before he gets to line of scrimmage at 6 yards, if you don't slow him down after 6 yards, it's 26. I mean, the way he gets rumbling – and it's good night, Irene. That guy's amazing right now.
And the 49ers, maybe the most impressive team of the weekend, destroyed the Vikings.
Yeah.
They ran the ball at will all over San Francisco. They did what Kyle Shanahan basically foreshadowed he would this mm-hmm. week. He talked about how important it is to run it, but he said that they like to set up the run with the pass. Well, what did you see? They came out on that first drive, and they threw the ball on almost every snap all the way down the field. I think it was like 6 of their first 8 or 7 of their first 9 plays on that touchdown drive. Softened up Minnesota a little bit, picked on Xavier Rhodes, and then as the game went along, defense starting to get tired, they start pounding the football, and they ran it down their throat. Minnesota's offense couldn't do anything. It was one of those games you and I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Cousins, for as well as he's played and as great a season as he had, when you pressure him, when you get home against him, he is very limited as it pertains to eluding the pocket, getting away from the pass rush, trying to keep plays alive. That's not what he does. He drops, he plants, he throws, he's accurate. He does all those things well. But he has problems when you hit him, when you pressure him. And the 49ers dominated the Minnesota pass protection, and Cousins was essentially useless the rest of the game.
This is the only game that I had the right read on, it seems like. And it was the opener, and then everything else was embarrassing for me the rest of the weekend. But San Francisco's defense wasn't getting enough play for whatever reason. People kind of ignored how good they were. I mean, they were right up there with New England in terms of some of the overall numbers, and frankly had a much tougher schedule than New England did to demonstrate this stuff. San Francisco is excellent up front. They are awesome, awesome, awesome against the pass. You can get them in the running game a little bit at times, but when they know you're dropping back, they are incredible. When it comes to the front 7, they cover very well. They can get to the passer. They can harass you. They're top 5 in sacks, sack percentage, quarterback hits, all those things without blitzing. They blitz the 4th fewest among teams in the NFL. You could see it. That's the recipe. That defense. Offensively, you guys get a couple drives together. We got the rest. And that's how this game played out.
And then there were 4 championship games set. Titans against the Chiefs, pretty much diametrically opposed. I mean, the Chiefs in the first half yesterday, I think it was like 24-3 passes to runs for their 28 points before intermission. And then the Titans just went aground and pound you as best they can. In the NFC Championship game, San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan Green Bay and Matt LaFleur, two guys I covered every single day for four straight years on the beat with the Redskins, 2010 to 2013. One of them will be coaching in the Super Bowl.
Mm.
And if LaFleur is doing it, it'll be in his first ever year as a coach. But you've already had McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur all make it to the conference championship game since leaving. And then we got a national championship game in college football tonight as
well. Yeah.
LSU trying to make like it's 1958 when they went undefeated, beat a Clemson team in New Orleans for the national title. They're trying to run all that back. Clemson, South Carolina, population of 14,000 with a stadium that seats over 81,000 and is full every weekend.
You go figure that.
Third national title game in 4 years. We've got a great breakdown on that game coming for you at 11 o'clock with our buddy Chip Patterson. That's 45 minutes from right now. Next, let's get in detail on each of the NFL games this weekend. That was kind of the painting with a broad brush. We'll take out a shovel and dig into those games, starting with yesterday's Packers and Chiefs wins on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
There's no offseason, not at the St. James anyway. The DMV's hottest destination for sports, wellness, and active entertainment. The St. James is a sports utopia. There's something for everybody there. So I think it's this week. I think this week this is happening. So the facilities at the St. James are incredible. The complex houses multiple state-of-the-art indoor venues, right? They've got regulation-sized ice rinks, a turf field house, gymnastics center, even an Olympic-sized pool. In addition, they got a whole bunch of basketball courts right there, and they're beautiful. The courts are awesome. So this week, I think, January 18th through the 20th, hosting the inaugural Kevin Durant MLK Classic Basketball Tournament featuring some of the top high school teams and players from around the country. That's pretty awesome. Gives you an idea of how high level these facilities are. Speaking of great facilities, the Premium Health Club offers top of the line equipment and weights, dedicated personal trainers to help you achieve your body goals. Every new member gets two complimentary health assessments with a personal trainer. And in fact, now for a limited time, you join the St. James and you pay zero initiation fees and you get $250 off of sports programming. Pretty cool. Visit thestjames.com/2020. That's thestjames.com/2020.
AFC, NFC championship games now set. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan. Our guy Chip Patterson, great job covering college football all season long for us. Going to be on the show at 11 o'clock, so make sure you're listening. We'll get you ready for the national championship game tonight. Danny, I always get up for title games. College football is one of those things I think it's immensely popular in the country, but you're either a diehard with the team or you're like me and you like the big-time games.
Yeah, I'm just a free agent that only kind of wants the marquee matchups. You know, the only intrigue I have during the season is it going to be any, who besides Clemson and Alabama are going, you know?
Right.
And that's kind of what I follow very loosely in storylines.
But I would say even if you are in my camp, in your camp, where you're always going to be up for the national title and those elite-level games with the major programs and the marquee powerhouse players are going to get you excited. Even by those standards, tonight's kind of another level. You got two 14-0 squads. This has basically been a collision course, if you take Alabama out of it, it seems like, for weeks on end. And you got the two best teams all season long in the sport going head-to-head. Someone's going to be undefeated and a champion, and someone's going to be one of the best runner-ups we've had in recent years. It's going to be a great game. We'll preview it for you in 40 minutes. But let's get back to the games that were this weekend. We'll start with yesterday's slate in the NFL, the Sunday action. And we'll begin with the closest game of the weekend, that 28-23 final. Green Bay Packers beating a Seattle Seahawks at home at Lambeau. Really, the game was in jeopardy for Green Bay because they were getting the ball back, trying to move the chains. Russell Wilson had Seattle's offense humming. They were starting to make plays. Receivers were getting open. It was very clear the Packers' defense was worn down. But they had to move the sticks one more time, and Aaron Rodgers was able to on a huge third and long play to Devontae Adams to put the game on ice.
Second down and six. Ball to the left hash mark, 40-yard line of Seattle. Rodgers under center. Single back offense. Jones the lone back. Fake to Jones. Rodgers deep drop looking. Pops it over the left side. Devontae wide open. Outside the numbers 20. Cuts it back right past Flowers. 10 to the 5. To the end zone. High stepping. Touchdown. Devontae Adams. 40 yards.
40-yard throw. So a few things here. First of all, the stones from Matt LaFleur.
Oh, yeah.
Back-to-back passes. Most of the time, that's run, burn timeouts. Basically, get rid of their timeouts, and then they get the ball back because of the two-minute warning with a couple minutes to go. He looked across to the other sideline and said, I'm not letting Russell Wilson touch this football. So the call itself was pretty ballsy. The throw by Aaron Rodgers was an all-timer. And that was his best throw of the game, maybe of the season. And the catch by Rodgers over the shoulder, the way he brought it in, by Adams, on the Rodgers throw, was perfect. So all three of those guys on that snap, their best moments of a huge day for Green Bay.
And even still later, you've got a chance in that game if you're Seattle, right? Credit Green Bay's defense stepping up and forcing a punt, but it looked like, you know, if Green Bay gets a couple first downs, there's another throw to Adams down the sideline when they put him in the slot. Aaron Rodgers could have paused time like Zach Morris, walked out there and handed it to Adams. It was that good of a throw and catch and route in the whole nine yards. That was a Devontae Adams day. Our guy's better than your guy, lining him up everywhere.
8 catches, 160 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He exploded against Seattle.
And so, but the two things that in this game that drove me crazy, just as a fan watching the sport, right? There is a clear as day, obvious, this is a no-brainer, fumble that Green Bay recovers. And this is early in the game. Ended up not hurting them because they stopped Seattle and Seattle punts it away. But clearly, Green Bay has the football. The Green Bay player picks himself up off the ground, hands the football to the ref, and they go, we couldn't really figure out what happened. We're just going to give it to Seattle, and they kind of moved on.
It was actually, just to clarify, it was the Seahawks' first offensive snap of the game.
Yeah.
Packers got the ball, went down, and scored. Seattle gets the ball, and on the first snap, it was a throw to Jacob Hollister, who fumbled. And they ruled it a fumble, but they said they couldn't basically tell what happened with a clear recovery.
Green Bay guy had it. A second Green Bay guy got on top of him to help secure it. A Seattle guy was generally there, like blocked the camera. So they just gave it back to Seattle. I thought that was outrageous. Then late in the game, Jimmy Graham, his head is down before the yellow line. His head was hitting the ground. His elbow's on the ground. The majority of his body is short. Where the football isn't the same spot where your head is. Everyone who's seen the picture knows what I'm talking about. And they just kind of went, yeah, we can't figure that out. We'll just call it a first down. Now, I think Green Bay probably gets the first down the next play to ice the game. But still, you'd like the thing to be called right in a multi-billion dollar industry. Frustrating. That's not why Green Bay won the game. They won it because they were the better team, despite Seattle's furious comeback. And they earned this thing. But, man, frustrating.
After the game, Devontae Adams, who was the hero with 8 grabs and 160 yards, scored 2 times, was singing the same song Green Bay sang all week. They feel like, despite now being 14-3, nobody gives them any credit.
Feels good. I mean, obviously, we've been putting a lot of work in since OTAs with a completely new system, new coaches, everything new. So to be in this position, do as well as we did in the regular season and then come out and, you know, make a statement with this win when nobody thought that we would. Everybody, you know, was against us. You know, all the ugly wins, I guess they didn't look good enough for everybody to think that we're going to come out here and handle business. So, you know, I'm proud of my boys.
On the Seattle side of things, Russell Wilson was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he deserves a lot of credit. I liked Tyler Lockett's performance. He went for 136 on 9 grabs. They didn't involve DK Metcalf as much as I would have thought. 5 targets, 4 catches for him.
I wonder if that was the point, to take him away. Possibly. To let nothing easy happen.
But the thing with the Seahawks I just can't quite figure out is Brian Schottenheimer, their offensive coordinator.
I think I've got it figured out.
First of all, signing Marshawn Lynch was irresponsible. You know that I've been saying this all along.
Mm-hmm.
What is the point of a pro scouting department if you're just going to do what a fan in Section 317 would want you to do? Like, they make that move for what reason? Because fans are going to be happy? Because the locker room's going to cheer when he walks back in as some conquering hero? You mean to tell me, all season long, all these running backs who try out for 7-8 teams that are in great shape, there's probably a dozen guys available who have played in the NFL this season. None of them would give you a better chance with a dozen carries yesterday than Marshawn Lynch at his age, with his broken down body, out of shape, rumbling into the line of scrimmage and getting tackled immediately. 12 catches for 26 yards, 30 carries for 64 over the last couple games. It's bad enough that you signed him. I think that was ridiculous. Again, you have a scouting department so that you don't just do the thing that every fan would do because it's a guy that they know who's available. But on top of that, there was a series where they handed him the ball 3 straight times early in the game yesterday. Of course, they had to punt because they ran it 3 straight times, got 9 yards, and had to punt. What are we doing here? I got Russell Wilson. I got Tyler Lockett. I got DK Metcalf and Jacob Hollister. I got a running back no one's heard of named Travis Homer, who's way more capable of helping me out of the shotgun, running the football between the tackles, or catching passes than Marshawn Lynch. I just couldn't believe, A, that their plan was originally to sign that guy, but whatever, if that's just some nostalgia fun thing to boost some morale, and he gets 3 carries on the goal line, whatever. You give him 12 carries in that game? I could not believe that was the best thing they had planned in a game that they had to have in Green Bay.
They've been successful. So who am I to criticize, right? This is a good program. Seattle knows what they're doing. Pete Carroll and company are good. This is the second straight year you've gone down with the ship, so to speak, right? Where you didn't do what's in your own best interest. You lost to the Cowboys on the road last year because it was so damned important to try to push people around and be physical and establish the run or whatever the hell else it was. Listen, if you run the ball like Tennessee, run the ball like Tennessee. Do that. I'm not anti-run. I'm anti-ineffectiveness. They were ineffective in the first half. The better path is to have your all-pro, your MVP candidate, the best player on your roster by far, I don't know, have a chance to do some things with the football. You saw it in the second half, the furious comeback. Imagine you start the game in a similar fashion. Instead of doing whatever the hell it was in the first half, you win. You're going to the NFC title game because of it. Second straight year, man. I don't know. It would frustrate the hell out of me if I was a Seahawks fan.
Well, they have, like Tennessee, and we'll see if the Titans can pull it off, because they've got the dominant running back to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Carson is not Derrick Henry, but he's a lot closer to it than whatever they had yesterday.
Right.
Your ceiling is lower when you play this style of football. You don't really have much margin for error. You can still win. It's just harder to do it. So this idea of, well, nobody can win if they run the ball. Everyone's like, look at all the teams that run the ball that are still left. No one's saying you can't do it. It's just more difficult. So if you're Seattle, I think it's really tough to win a Super Bowl with this group, this way doing it, the same way it will be for Tennessee. Now, if they do, good for them. I mean, Derrick Henry's having an iconic, memorable, epic playoff run, the likes of which we really haven't seen before. And maybe he can keep that train on the tracks. But yesterday, kudos to Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay as they move on to an NFC Championship game. They did just enough. Wasn't an Aaron Jones day, though. That was an Aaron Rodgers day. 243 and two big throws late in the game in Devontae Adams, feasting on Seattle's secondary. The other of Sunday's games, the early game. One of the great comebacks in playoff history by Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs. We'll cover that next on Grant and Danny right here on The Fan.
The Chiefs go to a knee, and that will be that. And the Kansas City Chiefs with the fourth largest comeback in NFL playoff history. Down 24 to nothing early in the second quarter. An onslaught of seven straight touchdowns and a field goal. And then a defense that just took the game over. Final score, Kansas City 51, Houston 31. And for the second consecutive year, the Chiefs will host the AFC Championship game right here at Andy's Acre at the 39th parallel.
Grant and Danny welcoming you back on 106.7 The Fan. That was Chiefs Radio. After falling behind 24 to nothing early in the second quarter, Kansas City went on a 51-7 run.
41 straight points. 41 straight points. Points. 41.
They dropped a 50 burger at home on the Texans. Here's the weirdest thing, and this is not like an I was right thing, but I think that I speak for everyone when I say this. I'm watching the game with my wife, and she goes, you picked the Chiefs. What's happening? I thought you told me the Chiefs were definitely going to win.
My wife said the same thing to me.
And she just kept like, it was almost, I don't know why, but she was kind of trolling. She's like, it's 24 to nothing. Are you serious? I thought you told me there was no way the Texans would win. And I swear this is a real conversation. I said to her, the Chiefs are going to win. At 24 to nothing.
You said that?
I was so confident. Did you ever think they were going to lose?
Yes.
You did? See, and again, this is not me doing a tough...
After like the fifth drop pass, a Kelsey swatted one to the ground.
This is not me doing a tough guy bit. In hindsight, I probably would be wrong 9 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
But all I was thinking at 24 to nothing was, they can score 14 points like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was not, at no point did I think they would take the lead before halftime. I mean, let's get that out of the way. The Doug Williams second quarter that Pat Mahomes had with four touchdown passes.
You didn't see 28 points in
I was not
5
projecting.
Minutes.
But I thought it would be 24 to 14 at the half. They're down 10 to the Texans with two quarters to play at home. They probably win that game. And that was my thinking. They'll get within 10. It'll be 24-14. And they will outscore them, and it'll be a field goal win at the end or something. I had no visions of 51 points and 500 yards and, you know, Pat Mahomes throwing five touchdowns. But even at 24 to nothing, because of how it had happened, it wasn't like the Texans were dominating them. It was just kind of fluky. It was dropped passes and blocked punts. And it was as if a high school team put the Chiefs uniforms on for the first quarter and said, we got this, guys. Don't show up. We'll beat the Texans. And then they were down 24 nothing. But I never really thought they were going to lose. I don't know if it's trust in Pat Mahomes or Andy Reid or that offense, but there's only one offense built to do that, Danny. Maybe the Saints, in terms of the rest of the playoff field, could have come back from down 24.
Yeah, maybe.
Every other team in the playoffs, the Ravens, the 49ers, the really good teams, none of them could have done that. The Packers, nope. The Seahawks, nope. There's one, the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And they didn't even break a sweat doing it.
Yeah, and they did it. It was remarkable. Really was. My wife was especially salty with me because I had told her that I think the largest lock of the weekend, the team that I feel the most comfortable in, was her Ravens. I thought they would dominate Tennessee, get these pretenders out of here.
I remember from Friday.
So the day before, she keeps looking at me like it's my fault, like I'm the one that right, drew right. up the game plan or that I botched it, you know?
Because you gave her extra confidence, yeah. And now she's mad at you.
And so she could, I mean, like with an ice pick, just chipping away at the sculpture. Just were you as confident as you were in Baltimore? Like, is this what was supposed to happen? And I was flabbergasted because, as you said, Kansas City, it wasn't as much what Houston was doing. And you give Houston credit for showing up and being ready to go. But this was a Kansas City, like, Robinson, number 11, hates catching the ball, despises it, dropped so many passes early. Travis Kelce, the all-world tight end, dropped a pass or two. The best special teams unit by a lot of people's grades over the course of the season, a block punt for a touchdown. Anything that could go wrong went wrong, like our promo, where you're like, if it can go wrong, it did go wrong, said Kansas City. And then the kickoff return by Hardman happened. As soon as that happened, that was the little teeny tiny spark. Next thing you know, Kansas City rips off 28 points in 8 minutes.
It was the oddest special teams half ever because their special teams killed them, but then also gave them the big play to get them back into it with Hardman. And I thought the whole game was saved and changed on that Sorensen tackle on the fake punt. I actually loved the call from Bill O'Brien. A lot of people will work back from the result and say it was a bad idea.
Call, I agree with you.
I loved that decision. If you get that there, that might be a backbreaker. And at the worst, all it does is you possess the clock, the ball a little more going into the half, and they're still down 17 or something like that. That tackle was a game saver. In the end, though, Pat Mahomes, he just wasn't going to be denied. Very comfortably, 23 of 35, very calmly throwing to wide open receivers, rolling out of the pocket with his athleticism, 5 touchdowns, 3 to the guy who may have had the best game of the weekend by any player not named Derrick Henry, and that was Travis Kelce.
24-14 Houston, 6:39 to go, second quarter. Sprint out action to the right side. Mahomes holding it. Now fires it late. Kelce gets into the end zone, turning his left shoulder. Touchdown, Kansas City! 20 points in lightning fashion by the Kansas City Chiefs. Great protection, and Travis Kelce is tearing the Texans up.
10 catches, 134 yards, 3 touchdowns on a 12-target day for Travis Kelce. The Chiefs didn't even really attempt a run during that comeback. It was just Pat Mahomes
just highly
in the
effective
backyard.
Passing.
It was unbelievable.
So to me, the game swings. I touched on it's the sequence. The kickoff return by Mecole Hardman. Houston dominating the contest. You get to 4th-and-1. It will end up being a 31-yard field goal. Your offense is humming. You've got Deshaun Watson. You've got option upon option upon option, okay? Bill O'Brien, Mr. O'Brien, if you please, decides, I don't like any plays we have in our playbook. This is something that he said.
Well,
he didn't like any plays.
They decided to go for it correctly and then had to burn a timeout, remember?
Yes, they called timeout.
Offense stays on the field. And because I said, again, I'll reference this. It was just me and the wife watching this game. I don't have anybody there.
No other witnesses.
And it's just me and her. And I said, he's going to kick this. She goes, what? I said, he's going to kick a field goal here because he's a loser. He's a loser of a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept the offense on the field. And she said, no, they're going for it. Well, it's not his fault that somebody screwed up and Deshaun Watson screaming at someone and where is this guy in the huddle? So they burn a timeout. What is his fault, though, mm-hmm. is now, I think, in his mind, he's out thinking himself, but he's going, well, part of us going for it is there's a little bit of an element of surprise. They got to shuttle bodies on. You got 30 seconds to get this right if you're the defense. Now they know we're going for it, so they're preparing. Stop out thinking yourself.
Yeah.
That guy who wears the cape and flies around, Deshaun Watson, put the ball in his hands because he's better than Kaimi Fairbairn.
Yeah, it was the loseriest sequence of the game for me. So instead of having a chance to go 28-0 and with more time coming off the clock, more possession, more dominance, more everything, you settled for a field goal and then the kickoff return happens. To me, that was the swing. It was the tiny thing where Houston had all the momentum, and momentum's a tricky thing to sort of quantify and figure out, but there was an underwhelming, you know, it's like the barn door opened and kind of the swell went out. all the momentum that Houston had was kind of quelled by that decision. They made a field goal. They got more points on the board. Congrats on that. Next thing you know, Kansas City's furious comeback begins. I don't think it happens if they go for on fourth down and get it. I don't think Kansas City wins that game if Houston goes for it right there and gets it.
You might be right. I mean, I'm not going to pin this on O'Brien because I hate when we work back from a result. I went into that game thinking Bill O'Brien's a way better offensive coordinator than head coach, and I'll leave thinking that.
You probably shouldn't be the GM also.
He didn't not stop Pat Mahomes. He didn't let Travis Kelce get wide open all day long. He didn't make that amazing tackle, you know, on the fake punt that I thought was a really, really good call. And by the way, executed beautifully until a hero play by the Chiefs.
I have no problem with that call. You'll never hear me criticize that.
So I didn't think this was a Bill O'Brien day, really, honestly. I mean, his team was clearly pretty prepared. They jumped out to a 21-0 lead in the first.
You'd say, yeah.
And led 24-0 at one point in time. One more game to get to. And I guess we could actually pivot to the two games of Saturday and go back to the Ravens-Titans, Derrick Henry show, and the Vikings getting eviscerated by the 49ers, Kyle Shanahan onto the NFC Championship game. We'll do that next on Grant and Danny. Remember, our first look at tonight's national championship game in college football at 11 o'clock with our buddy Chip Patterson right here on G&D. Ian Eagle, CBS on the call. I love Ian Eagle, by the way. He is my TV one seed. Maybe I'd go Mike Tirico in that same vicinity, but Kevin Harlan, Ian Eagle, Mike Tirico, I'd have to give it some more thought, kind of the Mount Rushmore right now of TV broadcasters.
It's a pretty good one. I mean, I think I'm different than you in the sense that I love Gus Johnson so much because I like being excited too. Sports are exciting. I like being excited.
I'm a big Gus guy.
Those other guys are so smooth.
Ian Eagle gives you the energy and the he gets up for the big moments, and it's just so smooth.
Yeah. Tirico's the smoothest.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's just that moment's not too big for him. He's got it.
I've never seen anyone do what Derrick Henry's doing right now. I saw the graphic, by the way, and John Riggins is on it. He just passed John Riggins for, like, crazy playoff performances.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking, man, you older Redskins fans, I'm so jealous of
you. Oh, yeah, dude.
You got to see something like this, and it was a Redskins player doing it? But against the Patriots, Derrick Henry went 34 for 182. Against the Ravens, he went 30 for 195.
And by the way, just a quick side, this wasn't against the Giants in October.
Right.
This isn't against the Detroit Lions. The Patriots especially are excellent. The Ravens are a really good defense, and it didn't matter.
This is a guy, by the way, I was so wrong about coming out of
college. The most wrong.
Running backs who are great in this league just don't look like him. And you know who else was wrong about him for a little while was the Titans because they just have never really used him that much until these last couple of seasons, almost accidentally. They brought in Deion Lewis to help him out a whole lot, and it just has become the Derrick Henry show. But I don't know how anyone's going to stop him. I mean, if I'm the Chiefs and I'm playing the Titans, I'm just kind of going on a little tangent here. We can get back to this game in a second. But I don't think I'm exaggerating or doing a bit here. I'm putting 8 in the box on every running down, and I'm playing man coverage on A.J. Brown, who's going to beat that.
Are you doing what Tennessee did against Baltimore, basically?
Yeah.
That was their strategy. That's what they did that.
Ryan Tannehill, make accurate throws. I'll take my chances at having more luck in man coverage on the outside against good receivers like A.J. Brown, who's a beast. I can't have Derrick Henry. If he runs the ball 30 times, I got to keep him around 105, something like that.
Well, if he runs the ball 30 times, good chance you're cooked because they probably have a lead. They're probably going downhill.
But I'm just saying I'm taking the numbers he's had the last 2 weeks.
No, sure.
Instead of close to 200, it's got to be down around 100.
Yeah. I mean, I'm basically betting big on most first downs, right? Where I'm saying, you know, we're run blitzing. We're going to see if we can get a negative. Because, again, if he gets to the line of scrimmage without having been touched, it's 6 yards. It just is. He's the way they're blocking, the holes they're creating, him going downhill, you're not slowing him down. You're not stopping him. And if he gets to the second level or gets to a linebacker without having been touched, it's a 20, 30, 40, 50, 60-yard run. He's on a roll at this point. The way they're run blocking is unbelievable. So I'm going to bet big. And if they beat me on a first down, A.J. Brown deep, or the kid Raymond that caught that touchdown pass against Baltimore, I tip my cap. I just can't go down having him bleed the clock, body punch after body punch, tiring me out. I got to get him some TFL.
Ryan Tannehill had 8 completions a week ago and 7 this week. 45 of his 88 yards came on that one first down touchdown throw. By the way, I love that they take those first down shots on occasion.
They're smart, man.
In this offense, that's what you got to do because you're going to get those looks where you get open down the field vertically. The Ravens, maybe the bigger story, I guess, is talking about what happened to them. So give credit. Derrick Henry's just unbelievable. Ryan Tannehill, he is a passenger in this whole thing. God bless him. It's a great story. I mean, people are talking about maybe him starting a Super Bowl in Miami.
Yeah.
That would be incredible. But there are 40 quarterbacks in the league probably to this point who could give you what he's given you the last two games. And really, this is one of the most dominant individual two-game playoff runs I've ever seen with Derrick Henry right now. And their offensive line and their offensive coordinator Arthur Smith and their head coach Mike Vrabel are all very, very deserving. To the Ravens for a second. This was always the concern for me. What if you got to come back? What if you got to throw the ball? And people say, oh, well, no team really comes back. Kansas City can come back. New Orleans, there's a lot of teams that can come back.
Sure.
My point is Baltimore cannot. If Lamar Jackson's got to stand there and throw it, you know it's happening. 6.2 yards per, a touchdown and two picks, four sacks, a 63 rating. This is kind of what it was going to look like. Now, maybe he keeps getting better as a passer, and ultimately he gets to a point where he can do that, but you saw it like I did, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Ball coming out awkwardly, end over end, kind of looking passes and ducks out past the numbers. You take away what they do best. They're pretty easy to be had. It's just getting to that point is so difficult. And this year, 14-2 says only two teams were able to.
And their losses early on in the season, obviously they hadn't lost in months, were those kinds of shootout games back and forth where
Browns and Chiefs.
And the Chiefs. Yeah, the Chiefs was early. It was like 33-28. They still put some points on the board, but they had to come back kind of furiously. And it was just, you know, you're not faking three different ways. It's drop back, pat the football, and throw. And, you know, 22-year-old Lamar Jackson's not great at that just yet. I really do think he'll get better. I mean, I'm buying stock in the guy, if there is such a thing, to buy stock in the MVP at 22 years old, by the way. But just in terms of as a passer, but I don't think you're ever seeing Aaron Rodgers or Brady or Peyton Manning there. And I don't think that's an insult, by the way. That's rarefied air. But Tennessee's game plan was very simple. They borrowed some of what Buffalo did to the Ravens in a previous week in terms of what to play in terms of coverage. And they said, this is an 8 or 9 man box every time. Every time. You might gash us a couple times where we guess wrong and you break through where somebody makes a great play. Because that's going to happen. They even talked about that on the telecast where they go, sometimes Lamar Jackson's going to shake your butt and make you look bad. You live with that. You figure it out. But you continue to make them throw to your guys on the outside, and they did that.
We had Jermon Bushrod in studio Friday, and he talked about how important Mark Ingram is to this offense. And he spoke about Ingram knowing him because he played with him with the Saints last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought it was a big deal for the Saints to lose him this season as a running game. That ended up being a huge factor. I mean, they only had 9 carries for their running backs. Gus Edwards got 3 of them. And it was definitely a difference. You could see it. I mean, it was Lamar Jackson running the ball, Lamar Jackson throwing the ball, or nothing else. And that wasn't what they were all year long when Ingram went for 1,000 yards. The last game that we have not gotten to yet, and we'll have to spend more time on this on the other side of Chip Patterson, is the 49ers and the Vikings. This kind of played out exactly how we thought. It was a little bit more lopsided than I would have anticipated. I would have thought the Vikings could do a little bit more offensively. But San Francisco, and this is exactly kind of how you and I discussed this game, their pass rush destroyed the Vikings. Nick Bosa had 2 sacks. Solomon Thomas had 1. Eric Armstead had 1. DeForest Buckner had 1. Dee Ford had 1. They had a total of 6 sacks. Kirk Cousins got pressured and harassed, and when that happens, he doesn't have that Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Pat Mahomes scramble around and get out of the pocket and run away from traffic and, you know, keep extending play kind of vibe. It's all in rhythm. It's drop, plant, throw. And so they couldn't make plays in the passing game. But the bigger issue for the Vikings probably was they couldn't run the ball. Dalvin Cook, 9 for 18. Madison, 1 for 3, 10 for 21. That's a scheduled loss for them.
Mm-hmm.
But this was San Francisco coronation, really.
That's what that was. About
Kevin
that
Coleman went for 105. Mostert went for 58. Breida got 8 carries. Now they ran the ball 43 times in this game, but they came out passing. And then Garoppolo, basically, after taking the lead,
yep,
started handing the ball off.
They set their whole thing up. And Kyle Shanahan, almost prophetic in how this was going to go, right? Where he talks about you get to a certain number of carries, you're more likely to win. And Rubes just think all you have to do is get a certain number of rush attempts and it guarantees you victory. But his point all along was, if you want the rush attempts, you got to keep getting first downs. It means you better pass it well. You want to pass it well, you better rush it well. The things that we preach all the time. And that's what they did. They came out throwing, so that they could hand it off, and it was perfect. That was the most on-brand San Francisco win of their season.
Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers, Matt LaFleur and the Packers in the NFC, a couple of former Redskins head coaches, last two standing in the conference. Over in the AFC, Pat Mahomes, great body language, by the way. I got a text from a buddy of mine, and he's comparing the body language and the text of Mahomes versus Lamar Jackson, like when they went down. I don't really do the negative body language thing, so I won't even comment on the Jackson part of it. It's hard when you're getting beat and nothing's going right. But I'll say this. One of the reasons I was so confident in the Chiefs, when they were down 24-0, Pat Mahomes on the sideline looked like they were up 7. I mean, he was just laughing and having, you know, he didn't care. He was ready to go out there and throw five touchdowns. Loved watching that. Chip Patterson joins us next from CBS Sports to preview tonight's national championship game. LSU and Clemson, couple of Tigers tangling for the national title.
How you doing on that New Year's resolution? Did you promise yourself you'd eat better? Did you promise yourself you'd get to the gym and all of a sudden you're derailed? What are we, 2 weeks in? And has it gone right for you? Has it? If you're like me for so many different years, like so many of our listeners, your New Year's resolution kind of falls by the wayside. Don't let it fall any further. Go see our guys at EMP 180 Weight Loss. Take the bull by the horns. Take that bull down to Chinatown and smack him around. Let EMP 180 help you maintain a healthy weight.
It was cool. I was texting with my brother yesterday. My two brothers lost a combined 200 pounds in EMP 180. And he was talking about how he's been eating super clean post-holidays here and just how he now knows what he's got to do. And he's in shape and he's working out every day and he's loving it. And that's what EMP 180 did for him and for my brother. And now, they've helped you and I so much, losing the weight from where we were and just getting healthier in our lives, adding years to our lives, making us happier people, better to be around when you're not eating what you want, because that can be an angry time for you.
Yeah, you get a little salty, don't you?
EMP 180, people, 855-888-0180. That's 855-888-0180.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.